everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. You see, this is a podcast, right? You can't see me, but you could definitely hear me. And I actually talk about animation, considering animation is in the title. Thus, the title, The Animation Podcast. Specifically, the latest news that happened this week. However, there is something, though, that I need to tell you about the news this week, is that there really isn't any specific news about any animated projects. Like, there's no major news regarding animated features, about animation studios, about animated TV shows, nothing of the sort, really. And that's mostly because last week we had a huge explosion of animation news, mostly because of CinemaCon providing all the biggest news, not just of animated films, but of movies in general. It was the biggest week of movies, or like one of the biggest week in movies. But don't worry, I still have some stories. Instead of talking about the animated projects themselves, I will be talking about other stuff that has an animation theme to it. For example, I will be talking about the Disney World ride Frozen Ever After. Then afterwards, I will be talking about the Chinese-American animated feature film Rock Dog and the new trailer that it's released. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a couch gag from The Simpsons, which is animated by Eric Goldberg. Then afterwards, we will be looking into an idea of a ride based on My Neighbor Totoro. And then finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Now, for our first story, and this is something that Disney is trying to make really big, and this is going to be regarding a brand new ride that's going to be at Walt Disney World in Epcot, which is Frozen Ever After. Now, we pretty much got this vague idea of what this ride could be. Now, this could either be some kind of spin-off of Frozen, where we're going to see our favorite characters in a brand new adventure, or it's going to be like one of those highlight rides. You know what I mean, like Peter Pan's Flight, or like that ride that's based on The Little Mermaid, where it's showing the highlights of what happened in the movie. And chances are it could mostly be that. But anyways, what's basically going on is that Frozen Ever After is going to be coming at Epcot. And very soon, actually, but at Oh My Disney, they actually revealed some new information about it. One of which is that they talked a little bit more about the songs in the ride and also the characters. Now, what they said regarding the songs is that, of course, when you're going to go in the ride, you are going to hear some of the beloved songs that are in the movie, including Let It Go, Do You Want to Build a Snowman in Summer, and all that kind of stuff. But they did mention that the movie songwriters, Robert and Kristen Anderson Lopez, they actually wrote some new lyrics for the attraction. They just tweaked it a little bit, like just do some small changes. Think a little bit like the song I Want to Be Like You in the new Jungle Book movie that's just been released. Like, they got the original writer to the original songwriter, Richard Sherman, to just change the lyrics a little bit, but it's still the same song that we all know and love. So they already mentioned that before, but apparently one new thing that they did mention is that the original cast is going to be coming back to provide the voices of their respective characters. So, of course, we got Elsa, Idina Menzel, we got Anna, Kristen Bell, we got Olaf, Josh Gad, and we got Kristoff, Jonathan Groff, returning to provide the voice of their respective characters into the ride. And plus the fact that last year at D23, of course, we're going to see Sven returning, since they did show that, like, an Imagineer working on a Sven attraction. Or, no, not a Sven attraction. There's not going to be an entire ride devoted to freaking Sven. What I mean is that there's an audio animatronic based on Sven that will be in the ride. But however, that's not going to be the only part that will be there. They are also going to have what is called the Royal Summer Huss. Now, what it says here in Oh My Disney, that the project manager and producer at Walt Disney Imagineering, Wyatt Winter, get it? I wonder how he got in charge of the Frozen ride. But anyways, okay, all stupid jokes aside. It says here, Winter explained that the team went on a research trip to Norway last year to look for inspiration. The cabin is actually based on one found outside of Trondheim, Norway. On top of featuring objects inspired by traditional Norwegian crafts, the Royal Summer Huss includes several nods to Anna and Elsa's royal family. So basically, the Royal Summer Huss, what it is in general, it's a place where you can actually meet Anna and Elsa. Beforehand, you could pretty much meet them where normally the Disney princesses would be, but now Anna and Elsa have their own, like, little hut where you can actually meet them, considering that meeting Anna and Elsa nowadays is pretty much huge at Disney World. It's like one of the biggest characters that you gotta go meet, almost as big as Mickey Mouse, actually. But yeah, this is pretty much all that we know about the Frozen attraction so far. The rest is going to be kept as a big surprise, which is going to be coming at Epcot. But the one thing that is very, very interesting about this attraction in particular is that this is also in a massive center of controversy. In many ways, people use this as a prominent example of how the Disney company nowadays is taking away the originality of the Disney parks and just replace it with properties that already exist. Now, before Frozen Ever After, there was an attraction before it. Now, the thing is with Frozen Ever After, they actually put it in the Norway Pavilion in World Showcase at Epcot. Beforehand, there was an attraction called Maelstrom, and Maelstrom basically is this ride that explores around Norwegian lore. So we get to see Vikings, and we also get to see trolls. One of the most memorable characters that are in there, and the most unique one, is this three-headed troll is pretty much guarding the place, and he's just telling you, go away, go away, go away, and the boat suddenly just goes backwards. And, like, that's one of the most memorable aspects of that attraction. And then afterwards, like, you also meet up with another giant troll, and then suddenly you go into a giant drop. So that's basically the whole thing with Maelstrom. And like I said, it's an original attraction. It's its own thing. It's not based on anything else. It's as original as it is with Journey into Imagination. However, because of the overpopularity of Frozen, it just seems unavoidable at this point to have a Frozen ride. So they decided to replace Norway with Frozen, considering that the main theme with Frozen, it has a lot of these Norwegian kind of this major theme of Norway. Like, Arendelle has a lot of settings, a lot of architecture, a lot of designs that were inspired by traditional Norwegian Norwegian styles. And that, you know, and that's the thing. And, like, this is why Disney is, fans of Disney is not happy about this. Because nowadays, who knows what else they can do. Like, technically, they did the same thing with Pirates of the Caribbean, where, like, it used to be its own thing, but ever since the movies were released, they kind of, like, ever since then, they really got dumbed down, and basically, they neutered every single scene just so that they can include Jack Sparrow. It no longer has its own identity. It's all based on Jack Sparrow, and honestly, it kind of gets annoying. But I do understand it, that people are a bit pissed that they would replace it with this kind of ride that, like, just shows you the highlights of Frozen. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that this could possibly be a bad attraction. There is a good chance that maybe this could end up being fantastic. I mean, when that Little Mermaid ride was released, it actually looks pretty fantastic, and The technology that they did there, it really they really pushed it to new levels, especially with that huge Ursula audio animatronic. That just looks like that just honestly looks crazy. And who knows, maybe with what they can do with this ride, like maybe we'll see some amazing animatronics, we'll see some amazing special effects, like maybe we'll fully get immersed in the world of Arendelle and actually see live characters like Anna, Elsa, Kristoff, and Olaf. Like that, you know, like maybe that could be fun. So I'm sure this is definitely going to be a treat for Frozen fans, but for others, like I can understand why they're not really like for Disney fans, I can understand why this is not really looked upon very well. And I know this is not necessarily the last thing Disney is going to do with Frozen in terms of the attractions, but yeah, I do understand why people are not really happy with this Frozen attraction. I understand that, but who knows? Maybe it could turn out great. And I'm going to be very honest with you guys. I'm not really that big of a fan of Maelstrom anyways. So seeing an update on that, you know, it could be great, actually. So who knows? Maybe the ride can actually turn out great. So I'm going to keep an open mind to it. Let's see what Disney will do with this new Frozen ride when it will be open at Epcot this June. Okay, so for our next story, now this is going to be a trailer for a new animated feature. However, this is not really from any of the big studios. This is actually going to be coming from China, but also from the US as well. This is an animated feature that's brought to us by the Chinese companies this is not going to be easy to pronounce. Huayi Brothers and Mandu Pictures. And believe it or not, the animation is actually done at Real Effects, the same people that brought us Free Birds and The Book of Life. And you'll be surprised about the director. What I'm talking about is Rock Dog. Now, let me just read you a little summary about what this movie is about from my source here at Cartoon Brew. Rock Dog, based on the popular Chinese graphic novel, Tibetan Rock Dog, tells the story of Bodhi, a Tiberian mastiff who dreams of being a rock star against the wishes of his father, who wants him to follow his footsteps as a guard dog. Now, basically, they just released the trailer right here. And although this is more of a Chinese movie, they did release the trailer that they got is actually in English. And they did provide a surprisingly large amount of recognizable names, not A-list celebrities, but some pretty recognizable names you'll find here, including Luke Wilson, Eddie Izzard, J.K. Simmons, Louis Black, Kenan Thompson, Mae Whitman, Jorge Garcia, Matt Dillon, and Sam Elliott. And the biggest surprise here is that apparently the director of this film is actually brought to us by Ash Brannon, the co-director of films such as Toy Story 2 and Surf's Up. And it's very interesting to discover that Ash Brannon is actually doing something, considering that it feels like after Surf's Up, he kind of disappeared, unlike his co-director of that film, Chris Buck, who rightfully quit Sony to work at Disney and co-direct Frozen, basically. So, so we got a little connection to the previous story there. But, apparently Ash Brannon didn't fully disappear. He actually was directing this film. Now, if I may speak about my thoughts on what I've seen so far with the trailer, I am not impressed. This looks pretty bad, to be very honest. And like for several reasons, actually. Number one, going into the animation, it looks terrible. I mean, not horrible, but it looks pretty bad. Number one, like, there's no texture on the characters. Like, we don't see any fur or anything like that. The characters don't have fur whatsoever. And the designs, they just they don't look right. It's kind of like what Sony would do, that it looks cartoony, but it doesn't look like it's suited for computer animation. There's just, like, I'm looking at Bodhi right now, and he doesn't look right. He doesn't look like, I don't know, there's just something about him that just feels unappealing for 3D. Like, this is a design that works a lot more on paper than it does on computers. So, like, already that has some points off. And plus the fact that there are even other characters that they don't look as well. The movie overall feels like a poor man's version of Zootopia in general. And the second thing that I want to mention, what's even worse than the, like, okay, but before I continue, I just want to mention that, like, okay, maybe not all the animation is bad. I mean, it does look a bit bland, the designs don't look great, but at the very least, like, to its credit, I will say that the character animation is fine. Like, at least, I can give them that. Like, the movements, you know, they're smooth. They're pretty natural. That's fine right there. Maybe it needs a little work, but at least the character animation is pretty decent. But other than that, it does look pretty bad. Okay, so now continuing on, what's even worse than the animation, though, it's the story. My God, this is the most cliched thing I have ever heard. Like, this has been done so many freaking times. I mean, the fact that we got Bodhi, who's pretty much the dreamer character, like, we haven't heard that so many times before. Like, the dreamer character who wants to go out and, you know, live his dream and try, you know, and won't give up and all that kind of stuff. And then we also got his dad, which is another cliche of, you know, the tough father figure who wants him to do this, but it, like, he doesn't want him to follow his dream, but instead, like, you know, do what his dad says and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's an old cliche right there. I just feel like there's nothing here that feels appealing, honestly. There's nothing that just feels anything that's worth grabbing. It's just you're a cheap, not a cheap knockoff. It's just like your cheap, generic animated film. That's all it is. I feel like there really isn't anything special going on. And actually, I just realized this. How ironic that they actually got Ash Brannon directing this. Because, like, even the plot itself, it sounds a lot like Surf's Up as well. That, okay, you pretty much got the main character who is a dreamer, kind of like what Cody is, and, like, he wants to go out, follow his dream, rather it be a rock star or a surfer, and then he would, and in the trailer, they actually show him eventually teaming up with his idol, which in the movie is this cat character. Or in Surf's Up, he actually teams up with his idol, Big Z. How ironic is that? That basically he's doing the same movie again. And you know, the weird thing is that the weakest point with Surf's Up is actually the plot, considering how cliched it is. Thank freaking God that they actually found a way to make it so unique and so clever by doing the documentary style with Surf's Up. In here, this is a massive problem, considering that, like, it's just, you know, it just looks like your generic animated feature, and that's the problem. It's just so bland. There's no, you know, there's nothing in there that feels very unique. Like, maybe, like, they will push the fact that it's a Chinese, like, it's all funded by the Chinese and stuff like that, but I don't know. Like, okay, maybe it does have a bit of a Chinese theme to it, but that's it. There is really nothing special going on. Now, from what I can tell, it has yet to have an American a release date in North America, but it will soon be released in China on July 8th of this year, and I guess we'll have to wait and see if there's a distributor out there, like either the Weinstein Company or Lionsgate, would actually go out and distribute this film. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see on that. Now, for our next story, let's get a little bit more positive here. You know, let's get into something that a lot of people can surely enjoy, and that is the couch gag of The Simpsons. Say what you will about The Simpsons today. Yes, there are a lot of people who are sick and tired that Fox is still somehow making more episodes of The Simpsons, but you can't deny that the couch gags are really enjoyable. That and also maybe the Treehouse of Horrors are still worth watching to this day. But anyways, going back into the couch gags, what's really fascinating about it is that there seems to be more and more guest stars just for the couch gags alone, and most of which are actually special guest animators. In previous times, they actually brought in several people, including, it actually says, like, going again in Cartoon Brew, that they, the first time that they got a couch gag special guest star, apparently it started off with the artist Banksy, and ever since then they got so many people directing just the couch gag alone, including Guillermo del Toro pretty much doing a tribute of himself, showing scenes from like Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy, or Pacific Rim. And then there was also Steve Kutz, who actually made this 80s trip, like kind of this 80s tribute Miami Vice style couch gag with what is called Lazy Writer. Lazy Writer. And then, like, you got special guest animators as well, like some prominent names, including Sylvain Chomet, Don Hertzfeldt, John Christopher Lucy, Bill Plimpton, all of which providing like their own animated versions of like the couch gag in The Simpsons. But now, recently, Fox has uploaded a brand new couch gag. I couldn't find a source that really explains when that they released this couch gag specifically. Maybe it's for this week, I don't know. But this is actually, they made a couch gag with a special guest animator. Believe it or not, they got Eric Goldberg, the legendary Disney animator behind the Genie from Aladdin, Phil from Hercules, also the director of several segments in Fantasia 2000, including Rhapsody in Blue and the Carnival of the Animals finale, and so much more. They actually brought him in order to make a couch gag in The Simpsons, which is more of a tribute to classic Disney animation, where we see it starts out with Maggie doing the classic, late 20s, early 30s cartoons, like the black and white cartoons with rubber hose animation. Then afterwards, we see Lisa coming in as Cinderella. And then we got Marge entering in as Snow White, doing a little parody of Whistle While You Work. And then we also got Homer coming in, doing this parody of Baloo with the Bare Necessities. And of course, Bart actually comes in, and I'm actually surprised that they actually use the actual Sorcerer's Apprentice soundtrack. And he comes in as, Sorcerer Bart, per se, and pretty much turning things back to normal. And the one thing I can definitely say is that, yeah, it uses the designs of The Simpsons, but you can totally tell that this is from Eric Goldberg. Like, there's no hiding it whatsoever. If you know his animation, this is clearly him from top to bottom. And let me just say right now that Eric Goldberg is honestly one of my personal favorite animators out there. He knows how to make animation not only really smooth, but also really fun as well. He has this way to make these these lovable looking cartoons for some reason. Like, of course, the highlight of his career that everybody will say is going to be with the Genie from Aladdin. But like some of the examples provided here on Cartoon Brew, like there's also Phil from Hercules. And, like, a lot of his works from Fantasia 2000, including the Rhapsody in Blue sequence and also the Carnivals of the Animals finale, that is just, like, those are amazing. Those are beautiful. But they're also really fun. Other notable works that he has done as well that are really worth mentioning, these would also include Louie from The Princess and the Frog, and also what I find to be a very underrated animated performance that Eric Goldberg has done is honestly Rabbit from the 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie. That, you know, just by the animation of Rabbit alone, that is very underrated. That, like, honestly, I feel it should have more appreciation just for Eric Goldberg's work. It's, like, if you guys have seen it, you'll see that Rabbit is a bit more eccentric. Like, he's a bit, you know, he's a bit more, how can I put this, more awake and more alert. Like, you'll see that he can go a bit crazy. And not only that, on top of that, Eric Goldberg also did this really amazing job. Like, he did this pencil test 2D animation for King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph just to understand his movements. And you can definitely tell in the Wreck-It Ralph movie how King Candy's animation is very reminiscent to what Eric Goldberg would do. It's definitely awesome. And even with the going back into the Simpsons couch gag, every single step of the way, you could tell that it's Eric Goldberg. It, like, normally with TV animation, like with The Simpsons, like, it's not, this is not limited animation whatsoever. It's not choppy or, like, the characters don't suddenly go stiff whatsoever. Everything is in constant motion. Everything is moving. Everything has an action. Everything about it. Like, of course, like, I'm not really surprised that he actually did this early 1930s cartoon tribute with Maggie, considering that and that's another one that I forgot that he also worked on. The animated short Get a Horse. That is also another great work. And actually a really good example of cartoony computer animation. That is definitely fantastic. And honestly, I'm not really surprised that he also did that with Maggie, considering the stuff that he, like, such a great job. Like I said, with such a great job that he did in Get a Horse. Like, I wouldn't be surprised that he also wanted to do the same thing with Maggie. But you know, like, you can even look on the characters themselves that they don't fully look like Simpsons characters. You could tell that there are some elements that do look a bit more like something done by Eric Goldberg. And, you know, and that's kind of the beauty of it. And I think it's bet, like, and even on the Cartoon Brew source that I have over here, I think Amity said it best that nothing we can say can add to this. So just watch it and then quietly cry in a corner that TV animation is rarely even this much fun to watch. And I think that's the beauty of it. It's just so fun to watch. So go on YouTube right now and look for The Simpsons Couch Gag by Eric Goldberg animation on Fox. It is definitely enjoyable and I couldn't recommend it more. It's definitely fantastic. Okay, so for our next story, I'm not going to say that this is an official thing, but at the same time, I'm not going to say that this is like a fan-made thing either. It's very difficult to say. Like, it's not official, but it's a little bit more official than fan art. It's quasi-official. Okay. Fudge nabbit. Let me explain. Okay, so apparently John Ramirez, who is a Disney artist who has worked at the company for a long, long time, including working on films such as The Lion King and Aladdin, he eventually went on and moved to Walt Disney Imagineering and be a designer there, which he is still working on. And apparently he is also a big Studio Ghibli fan, and he decided that since, like, he's been doing designs for Disney rides, you know, he might as well do a little design for a little idea of his own for a ride based on My Neighbor Totoro. Now, this is not an official thing. This is not like Disney approved or anything like that. This is all just John Ramirez's idea. And it even said, like, what it says here on my source here at Kotaku. It says here, for what it's worth, while this isn't an official thing yet, that's not from what Ramirez is trying. He tells Kotaku that he's spoken to Hayao Miyazaki a number of times about Disney building this ride somewhere, and while he's been knocked back each time, he says he'll keep asking until they bar me down from the studio, or until he says yes. Now, Yeah, and that's basically that. This is basically what I mean, that it's not an official thing, but it's more official than a fan art, considering that it is actually from a Disney artist working at Walt Disney Imagineering. And from what I'm seeing here, what he has developed, basically, like like I previously said before, this is another of one of those highlight attractions, kind of like Peter Pan's Flight or the Little Mermaid ride, or probably what Frozen Ever After will be. This is pretty much what you would see, like, just highlights from the movie of My Neighbor Totoro. Like, from what I see, it starts out, you're entering into the new home that Mei and Sasuke would be in, and then afterwards you start to see Mei following the little Totoro, and once you get into the bushes, you'll suddenly go into this, like, sudden drop, and there you will find Totoro. Like, you'll see just Mei on top of Totoro, and what comes afterwards is that you will see a lot of video walls exploring into Totoro's forest. And then afterwards, you're going to go into another scene where it's nighttime, and what you see is Totoro and the crew, they're pretty much trying to make the tree grow. And then afterwards, you're going to be climbing up, and you will find that there is you'll see Totoro on top of the tree. But then suddenly afterwards, you'll enter upon another video wall, and you will see the cat bus. And of course, the cat bus does make an appearance. Then afterwards, like, you'll see what it says here is that you're going to be riding the cat bus, and then suddenly the cat bus will suddenly disappear. And then suddenly, like, you're going to go into this big parade, like, kind of this big grand finale where you're with Totoro and you're with Sasuke and Mei, and everything is more reminiscent to the title, where you see everything. Okay, it's hard to describe, though. You know, in the beginning when you see the title, it's like, Atsuko, Atsuko, Nokiko no Anewa. But yeah, like, imagine that scene, so it's an entire tribute. And then finally, you will enter in another room where it says the dust sprites are flying away, and then that's going to be when you can leave. And, and on top of that, what you are riding, basically, is a giant acorn. But just to add things there. But yeah, honestly, if I could put in my thoughts, like, it only raises one question for me. Why the fridge hasn't there been an attraction based on a Studio Ghibli movie? I mean, seriously, especially one at the Disney parks. Considering that Disney nowadays, they actually have the distribution rights in North America, and I think Japan as well, to the Studio Ghibli films, why not actually just release it? Like, why not just actually go and make a full-on studio, like, a ride based on Studio Ghibli? I even remember back when there was that massive tribute video not really Studio Ghibli, but more Hayao Miyazaki. You know the one that I'm talking about. The one where it's all set in the theme of Spirited Away, and, like, it feels like you're in a ride and you're going through all the movies that Hayao Miyazaki has made, from My Neighbor Totoro to Castle in the Sky to Porco Rosso to Spirited Away. It's all definitely fantastic, but honestly, with what they've set up, I can totally see this happen, and I would totally be down to see it actually made. That would be amazing. I mean, who wouldn't want to go into the world of My Neighbor Totoro? Like, I understand that there are a lot of people who would want to go into the world of Arendelle, but who would not want to go in a world that's based on Studio Ghibli? The only exception that maybe I'm not sure if I want to go is probably Princess Mononoke, considering that there's a massive war going on. But that's another story altogether. But that would definitely be amazing, honestly. And, like, if they do actually make this Totoro ride, there's only one place that I can imagine. Okay. Now, of course, there's going to be Tokyo Disneyland, since that's Japan, and, like, you better give Japan its own thing. So, okay, yes, that is a given, that you would make a Totoro ride there, but this would actually be so perfect to put into the Japan Pavilion at Epcot in Walt Disney World. I mean, seriously, think about it. I mean, even in the entirety of World Showcase, they don't really have that much rides. Like, they don't really have rides that are actually rides. The only two that are actually rides are, like, thinking about it, there's the Grand Fiesta Tour with the Three Caballeros at Mexico, and then soon there's going to be Frozen Ever After in Norway. Like, technically, there could also be the American Adventure, but that's more of a show, which is pretty much 30 minutes of audio animatronics telling you how America great, like, how America is amazing, and it's the greatest thing in the world. So, yeah. Like, if you're not American, like, it could be a little bit sickening to listen to. But anyway. Anyways, that would actually be amazing. Like, I honestly, even like how the Japan Pavilion is right now, it's actually, I love that place there. It's honestly, it's so weird. It's the only place in Walt Disney World where you can actually buy stuff that includes Pokemon, that includes Yu-Gi-Oh cards, that includes Nintendo products. Like, you can also get some Studio Ghibli stuff, but still, it's, you know, honestly, it's nothing short of amazing. Like, it's a geek's paradise. It truly is. But still, like, that it would be amazing if Japan can actually have a ride based, well, okay, like, the Japan Pavilion could have a ride based on a Studio Ghibli property. That would be just beautiful. And you know what? Like, you know, and just thinking it right now, why don't you just reconstruct the entirety of the Japan Pavilion and just turn that in, like, just turn the entire pavilion of Japan and turn it into Yubaba's bathhouse. Why not go on and fully do that? That would be awesome. And on top of that, you can have like a Spirited Away ride as well. That would be just, honestly, that's just an amazing idea. I fully believe that, like, Studio Ghibli should say yes, honestly, because even at this point, considering that they're really not at their prime anymore, they're having some financial troubles, and that, like, nowadays they are kind of on a hiatus on making movies and just focusing on doing stuff, little things like TV shows, helping out on games, and doing animated shorts for the Ghibli Museum. And that's another reason why they could do it, is because, like, Ghibli attractions, they have massive appeal. Like, things are going beautifully with the Ghibli Museum. And there's also another popular attraction in Japan where they actually fully recreated the house of Satsuki and Mei from My Neighbor Totoro. So why not actually have a Disney ride of My Neighbor Totoro? I mean, it feels like such a win-win situation. I don't know. Like, write me in the comments if there is a downside to it. I don't know. It's just, it sounds like an amazing idea. But yeah, don't, like, if I may speak to John Ramirez, don't give up on this, man. You got an idea going on. Like, we need to get a Studio Ghibli ride somewhere. We need a Studio Ghibli ride at Disney World, man. We gotta get one. And now it's time that we end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. And with this one, I gotta say that, like I said at the beginning, it was really tough to find an actual story about animation, but this one is actually quite interesting because there are some things that admittedly I want to express my opinion towards, and this is going to be regarding an article that I found on Cartoon Brew in which it heavily slams Bloomberg for an article that they've done a month ago regarding animated films. And the article on Cartoon Brew that I'm talking about is that it says Bloomberg is concerned about the glut of animated features. Now, basically what happened is that a month ago, Bloomberg, specifically the writer of this post, Kyle Stock, he wrote an article regarding how animation is becoming so ridiculously huge, how it's going pretty big. And the article is even called "The Two Scariest Words for Hollywood Studios in 2016 Animated Movies." He's noticing how there have been more and more and more animated features released. However, he also mentions at the same time that animated features are the most profitable movies, but they also cost a lot. So he's pretty much sending out this warning how maybe animated films can really bring out a lot of money, like Minions or Frozen or even this year's Zootopia. But at the same time, there also comes a massive risk. If a movie flops, then they can flop hard. And and he even brings out some examples from DreamWorks with flops like Rise of the Guardians, Penguins of Madagascar, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, and Turbo. However, with all that said, there were a few slip-ups here and there, and there were a few mistakes. But the biggest thing that apparently really caught Cartoon Brew's attention is pretty much some poor choice of words that this Bloomberg article put up. And what I'm talking about is that a lot of times in here, several times, they mention how animation is a genre. Now, the thing is with Cartoon Brew is that it's a great website. Like, it's definitely on point, and it's one of, if not the most popular website when it comes to delivering the news in the animation industry. They're a great website for that. However, and this is a big however, sometimes they could take animation a little too seriously. Like, even to the point that, even for me, it feels a bit awkward. And what I mean by that is that they take it seriously to a point that if ever you would slip up and mention, like, not just fully declare, but just slightly accidentally mention of how animation is a genre, then, Cartoon Brew is going to attack you hard. They will try to strangle you for every moment that you, like, for every breath that you have. And, you know, this is what I'm seeing here. That's pretty much, like, going into the article that Cartoon Brew did, like, to counter it, that's the biggest thing that really, like, made Cartoon Brew, specifically Amid Amity, to snap and full-on attack the article to keep on saying animation is not a genre and all that kind of stuff. Like, they hate it. Like, every time, I swear, every time it happens, like, there's an article that pops up on Cartoon Brew that will go on and on, like, trying to fully explain and attack the person, like, attack the one who said it, how animation is not a genre, and yada, yada, yada. And, like, he would attack them on so many things. Like, even the first article, even the first paragraph or the first two paragraphs, it even says, like, the year is still young, but this Bloomberg piece by Kyle Stock should be an end-of-the-year contender for 2016's most ill-informed piece of animation business writing. And honestly, like, it's not... the article here would continuously go on every single mistake that he has done on what that article has made, and, like, attack them saying, like, oh, they're wrong, and yada, yada, yada. And sure, like, there are several mistakes that this article made, but, you know, I don't think it's more that the article is ill-informed about animation, but it's more the factor that it's more of a case of poor choice of words. And yeah, like, you could definitely tell in the Bloomberg article that Kyle Stock has this attitude that animation is a genre and stuff like that. But you know what? For all the stuff that Amid Amity said to attack the Bloomberg article, personally, I feel like maybe he's attacking on him maybe a little too hard, because it does bring up some good points, actually. Now, yes, it is it is true that, you know, the animation industry, like, has been completely changed, and it's making more and more money. Like, whenever an animated feature is released, it's pretty big news. Like, whenever a major animation studio would release a new movie, it's immediately the next big thing, and it's something that, like, a lot of people gotta go see. There are, like, a few exceptions, of course, this year when Norm of the North was released, everybody knew, like, very wisely to stay away from it, because it ain't good quality entertainment right there. But what it did mention that it is true that animation is both the most profitable, but also the most expensive. Considering that there are many studios out there, they would spend so much money. Like, that's probably one of the reasons why there are so many movies that would flop. Not just with DreamWorks movies, but also another good example is The Good Dinosaur. Often they would spend a lot of money, especially in the marketing as well, how it, like, they spend so much money on it, down to the point that when it's up in the box office, it doesn't make as much as they wanted to. Like, that money doesn't come back, unfortunately. And even at that, it is pretty rare that you would find an animated feature to be so ridiculously successful. You know, when, it's probably once or twice a year that something like Zootopia would come in and they would make more than $500 million. It's honestly pretty crazy. But, Kyle Stock does have a good point that it is pretty more animation studios should be pretty cautious into spending like a ridiculous amount of money onto animated features, what DreamWorks has done for movies like Rise of the Guardians, Mr. Peabody and Sherman, Penguins of Madagascar, and Turbo. It is a little dangerous that they would go and spend so much money, especially when they would have to spend things they would have to spend it on like all these big names to be attached to this movie. There are so many studios out there that are so dependent on having A-list celebrities, not just DreamWorks, but also like Blue Sky and Sony. They desperately, they have to have an A-list celebrity in order to market their films. And even with Pixar, considering how, usually when they would make movies, they're too used to having, these massive successes. No matter what they do, they're always going to bring in so much money no matter what. Like, Inside Out almost made $1 billion, but The Good Dinosaur was their first experience with an actual flop. So yeah, there is a little bit of a warning. I'm not saying that they should cut down the cost for the wrong reasons. Like, they shouldn't cut down the pay of animators. That's the last thing that they should ever do. But I mean, when it comes to actually making an animated feature, it goes to show how expensive it can be, and that studio, maybe it's probably wise that other studios, especially Fox or even Sony, even though they may not be as wise about animation, they shouldn't spend too much money. They shouldn't become so dependent on it, because there's a very good chance that they'll release a flop. And going into Bloomberg, that's basically kind of the thing, is that with the Cartoon Brew, they just, reading on about what they said is basically nothing but attacking Bloomberg, saying that they're wrong, that animation is going fantastic, there's nothing wrong going on with animation, and pretty much trying to counter every single thing that they said, to the point that, okay, maybe it's a little bit too ridiculous. I mean, sure, maybe I understand there are some things that Bloomberg says that is kind of wrong. Maybe saying that there's too much animated features and stuff like that is that doesn't really make sense. So, how can there be too many animated features if they're also, really profitable? There doesn't seem to be, such thing as too many animated features. And yeah, and there are some things that they did wrong, but, Cartoon Brew really did hard. But there is one thing I will mention, that even on the Cartoon Brew article, they did mention they actually made a mistake on its own. Amit Amiti actually wrote here, throughout April, three of the top five U.S. releases has been animated films. The only legitimate question to any business piece should be asking, why does Hollywood continue to produce so few animated films when audiences has expressed clear desire to see more of it? And what he means by three animated features, now the top five, just saying, it includes, the top five, like, domestic gross movies for 2016 so far includes Deadpool, Batman vs. Superman, Zootopia, the new 2016 Jungle Book, and Kung Fu Panda 3. And the thing is that this is another reason why Cartoon Brew and Amidamidi would take animation uncomfortably seriously, is that what he counts as an animated feature also includes movies that are very CG heavy, like The Jungle Book, considering that the only thing that is real in that movie is just Mowgli. The rest is just blue screen and it's all computer generated animals. But come on, man. Like, there are even people who keep on telling him that that The Jungle Book is not an animated film, but he keeps on insisting, "Yes, it is an animated film." But come on, Amid, come on, man. It's not an animated feature. Everybody will tell you that it's not an animated film. I really like The Jungle Book. It's a really good movie, but it's not an animated film. An animated film would mean that Mowgli would also be computer generated. Mowgli would have to be animated as well in order for it to be counted as an animated feature. I understand where you want to go with it, but no, The Jungle Book does not count as an animated feature. But yeah, all to say, I know I've been rambling on for so long about this whole Bloomberg thing and Cartoon Brew, but I guess at the end of the day, the one thing to take off of this is that Bloomberg does have a little bit of a point of how, you know, like how animation can be a really risky business, considering that it's one of the most expensive mediums to use in the movie industry nowadays. But Cartoon Brew is correct, like saying that the article does have some errors here, feature a lot of errors here and there, and the attitude of how animation is the article in Bloomberg does have an attitude that animation is a genre and not a medium and all that kind of stuff. But like, you could tell how Cartoon Brew is mostly attacking Bloomberg, mostly because of how Bloomberg keeps on saying that animation is a genre. And it's like, it just goes to show of how the article Animidimidi is just probably taking animation a little too seriously than he should. And yeah, I guess that's pretty much the whole thing to say, is that I'm not saying Cartoon Brew is wrong, but they should probably take a bit of a chill pill. And that's all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also add me on my personal Twitter account at animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, then do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!